And we are back. You're listening to 99.5 FM WBAI in New York. My name is Kamau Kalfani, and the show is Underneath the Learning Tree. We, in fact, are going to expand on the conversation that we were having. For those of you who just tuned in, we were listening to the head of the NAACP in Jersey City, New Jersey, Kabili Tayari, and he was talking about the campaign that is being waged. Mayor Glenn Cunningham is running for the state senate, and it seems like that issue of race has reared its head again, and I'd like to expand on it. We have a couple of folks in the audience, and we have some folks on the line.
We have more than a couple of folks in the audience.
Well, did I say the audience?
Yes.
You said sleep is underrated, overrated.
In your case, yeah.
Huh. Anyway, I'm sure you recognize that voice. That is Serene Roberts. I would love to give you a title, but she is everywhere, doing everything. So we got her here tonight. This morning. How you doing, Serene?
I'm just wonderful. Thank you.
All right. And, sir, would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm James Bryan. I'm another sleepless fellow here in the studio. I'm just basically a listener for the last 15 plus years.
Okay.
And
evidence of the kind of programming we do, poor child.
Well, James, I don't want you guys to be in the cold, so we're going to also bring in a couple of people who are on the lines. And excuse me. I was trying to keep that a secret. But let's go to Washington, D.C., where we have Fahima Sek. Fahima Sek, are you with us?
Yes. Good morning, folks. How are you?
How are you this morning?
How are you doing, Fahima?
I'm well rested.
Hey, Washingtonian.
Well, we're also going to go across country to California, where we have with us
we're
also...
We're joined by Leslie Radford. Leslie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Leslie Radford is a member of the local advisory board of KPFK, our sister station. And they're coming out, by the way, with a really wicked-looking folio. Check out their website. It's beautiful.
That's right. By the way, let's remind folks what's about to happen in New York.
Well, our folio is back. It should be in your homes. Those of you who are members, it should be in your homes by mid-June. We are in fundraising mode, so, you know, stay up and listen to the program, but make sure you're here at 7 o'clock to help answer calls as well.
Right, and also joining us on the line, let's say good morning to David Moore. David, are you there?
Yes, glad to hear y'all. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Good morning. All right. Hi, James.
And finally, but definitely not least, let's let that last person in. Wait a minute. Oh, excuse me. Sorry. Well, we just lost.
Oh, darn. We just lost Evan. We'll get him back in a minute.
Right. Okay.
That's Evan Davis from Ohio, who many of you will recognize as being one of the reporters for Free Speech Radio News. And he used to hang out with the WBIX crew during that special period.
You know, let me open this discussion up by connecting this to this conversation that we just
had. Did we say who David was?
I said who he was. David Moore.
Well, yeah, that's his name. That's,
you know,
who he is.
Do you want to expand on that?
David Moore is a guy. Okay, so now that we're all clear.
That's plenty.
Another in-depth analysis at WBAI.
And I didn't get to say hi to Leslie and Fahima.
Hey, David.
Good to hear you.
David Moore is the son of Lou Hill and Eleanor McKinney, and he hails from Montana, where he listens to BAI on the Internet because he has not yet converted his local NPR station. into a proper Pacifica affiliate. But he's working on it, yes.
You know, I want to set the stage for the conversation because, as I mentioned, for those of you who just joined us, previously we had the president of the NAACP from Jersey City talking about a campaign that was just riddled with the issue of race. And On this show, many of you have heard us discuss the issue of race, and we have really gone after it in a big kind of way, but I have a lot of help in here this evening. Some of the greatest intellectuals of our time have joined us for this conversation, and I want to start with this very basic question. W.E.B. Du Bois posed the question. He gave the proposition that race, the color line, was going to be the issue of the 20th century. Here we are in the 21st century. What kind of report card do we get for dealing with this issue? I'll just throw that out generally if anyone wants to give it a shot.
Well, this is Fahima Sek. As many of your listeners may know, that Pacifica is currently going through a transition. One of the reasons why I'm on this call, because I serve on a subcommittee of the Pacifica Foundation. It's an ad hoc committee that has come together to develop diversity language, which will be contained in our bylaws. That's one of the things that's taking place in Pacifica. And then we also have, this is on the backdrop of a discussion that's going on in this nation around affirmative action. So I think what Du Bois had predicted is very much pronounced at this current time.
Fahima, what about the second part of that question on whether or not, how have we fared?
Well, I think it plays out different ways depending upon what your perspective is and what region of the country you're in. But it is very much a factor that is being discussed in the main. You just had a discussion. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to hear because I generally listen to BAI while I'm streaming, but I have to keep my lines closed. But I'd like to encourage somebody else to chime in as well.
Let me reach out to David and
sure.
Ask if you will tackle that.
Yeah, well, it's. I think it is the question. Who's not to agree that the 20th century was beset by confusion over that question. And I think the levels of, I'll use the term white entrenchment against facing that question are deep in the roots of American identity. The current atmosphere seems to be, let's get over it. But I don't, and I think the backlash against affirmative action takes that strange rhetorical form. But it's an effort continuing in different forms, and many, as Fahima is saying, in different locations, it takes different intensities, I guess. But this may sound old-fashioned, but I think slavery and conquest still drive the American identity machine, and we haven't yet faced those legacies as fully as we need to in order to raise our grade on that report card.
One of the things I think bears worth looking at, and I want to kind of sink this down to the individual relationships. Many times we have lofty conversations and big town hall meetings about the issue of race. But when it comes to one human being talking to another, it seems to me that everyone enjoys their protected status. Even as we ran off to war in Iraq, one of the interesting things is the fact that, apparently, that people here were not shaken by the fact that in order for there not to be a war, that it might require that the American population change their lifestyle, and that was like a faux pas, a no-no. So when it comes down to this issue of race, are we actually talking to each other? Are we actually reaching across the divide? And how do we stack up as individuals making their contribution?
I really am glad you bring it to that individual level, because I think even within Pacifica, but also in everyday issues in schools and workplaces around the country where race continues to play a factor. People need training in communicating, in opening their ears to each other, and in the ways they speak to each other. And this year of effort within Pacifica to rewrite diversity bylaws and other bylaws in the whole process of building a media democracy has for me highlighted that the urgency of that need for individuals to reassess how they're thinking about other individuals as we address these larger public issues.
Leslie, what's your take on that?
Well, I'll tell you, I agree with David, and I've been absolutely stunned by the white liberal resistance to incorporating anti-racism measures in our bylaws. And I can only think that that comes from a real lack of understanding of the depth and the significance of the problem. The people that I've talked to want to pass bylaws any way possible and duck entirely the issue of diversity, and yet that is the issue of the 21st century, finally. I think we're coming upon that. And I don't know how to divide.
Let me jump in here for a minute because, you know, we're talking about Pacifica. We're talking about the epitome of an understanding core of people, I think. You know, is this a fictitious posture lurking within the ranks of Pacifica?
Ah, that's, of course, the million-dollar question, isn't it?
And to complicate that, here's one for the road. When we're talking about all of this diversity and we're talking about the structure of these bylaws, are we in essence talking about genuine power sharing?
That's what I was about to say, Kamau. This is Fahima Sek. I think that the fundamental question here is it's clearly about power. And, you know, we have the liberal left articulating this rhetoric, but the fact of the matter is, in the final analysis, there is a resistance to sharing power. There is a desire to determine who will have access to the airways of Pacifica, which is essentially stemming from who will be in a position to determine that, because if there are people that are reflective of the society in governance positions on the local boards and on the national boards, it essentially will be reflected in the programming. So the fact of the matter is, it is about power.
And let me just say to everyone that we've been rejoined by Evan Davis, whom we lost. Evan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Good morning, Evan.
Hi.
Hi, Evan.
We'll reintroduce you. Evan Davis is an FSRN reporter, hails from Ohio at this point, and was active with WBIX during the year 2000, 2001.
A year that will go down. And anyway, let us move on.
In infamy. Well, if I could, I haven't been able to follow the conversation because WBAI's web stream has been down, I think, due to 9X messing with your phones.
Could you speak up a little, Evan? I can't hear you.
I'd like to answer a couple of the things that I've heard just in the last couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. First of all, I think that Leslie has mischaracterized a number of things, and I'd like to sort of offer a rebuttal here. I don't know of anyone in Pacifica, not a single person, who has not recognized the need for affirmative action, specifically as a solution to Pacifica's longstanding history of excluding people of color, not only from governance, but from programming and other aspects of decision-making at Pacifica, you know, and in programming, especially. That has a lot of historic roots, and I think if you read Matthew Lazar's History of Pacifica, you'll understand where some of those come from. Pacifica was started by white radical activists who, you know, shared a certain class orientation that they, to a large degree, failed to overcome. And that's a very difficult thing to do. You know, I mean, I'm not blaming them for that, but we've had a lot of years pass since Pacifica's foundation, and it's about time that we do take that step. So everyone I know in Pacifica has looked forward to the opportunity to adopt some kind of workable affirmative action plan. There is no liberal white resistance to power sharing, to you know, aggressive outreach to include more people of color in
actually, Evan,
it was me who said that, Evan.
Right.
Evan?
Yes.
This is Fahima Sek. Actually, it wasn't Leslie who laid that out. It was Fahima Sek who laid that out.
Okay. Also, if I could just jump in, I'm not sure if that characterization is completely correct, Evan, because I know there was a move by some people who felt they didn't want to be encumbered by such things as affirmative action. So everyone in Pacifica, in fact, is not unified behind the idea that there needs to be affirmative action.
I need to make a correction there. And first of all, I should say that I was not part of that movement. But that particular movement, as you describe it, was not about not being encumbered by affirmative action. It was a rejection of the particular plan that was being proposed by the Unity Caucus and now by the Diversity Language Committee, which is one plan out of many, but it's one that a number of us have particular objections to, not many of which really have anything to do with race at all. So the unencumbered elections petition was not at all a rejection of affirmative action. In fact, many of the people that signed that, and I saw who they were, continued to assert their desire to have more inclusiveness.
Well, the way I see this, if I can jump in here, this is Leslie again. I see this issue really dividing between what I would frankly call lip service to affirmative action without any remedy, without any action, and the good intentions plan, as I call it, and those folks who are seeking a way to mandate institutional change in Pacifica and find some way to ensure that people of color have always got a place in our governance.
James, I'm sorry, Evan.
Yes.
I just wanted to ask you before James chimes in.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned the everyone that you knew. And their perspective, and I'm not trying to be facetious, but what is the relationship of the people that you know to the general population and their posture on this issue?
The general population of Pacifica listeners, or
yeah,
the community?
No, of the Pacifica family, the listeners, the producers, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you know, having attended a number of meetings, not only national board meetings, but some committee meetings at stations, having gotten to know many of the principal players, from programmers to volunteers, et cetera, and having closely followed all of the dialogues on all of the major listservs, which is where a great deal of the dialogues within Pacifica take place, I can honestly say that I have never seen a single statement from anyone saying that they, that they oppose affirmative action.
I think the issue is maybe coming clear in this conversation to distinguish between. I'm sorry, this is David. To distinguish between affirmations of affirmative action and. Perhaps as Leslie was just suggesting, a real enlisting or applying of affirmative action in action. And it may be, it's not a he said, she said issue that we need to get into, but it would be worth talking about it in terms of, you know, what is the difference between generally agreeing to affirmative action as a principle and accepting bylaws which determine affirmatively that we will take action on diversity.
Right. I understand your statement there, David. Thanks for pointing that out. So by way of clarification for the listeners, what Leslie is referring to is a proposal to mandate affirmative action by some means that might be generally regarded as quotas, or if not quotas, then requirements, legal requirements that the composition of Pacifica's boards conform to particular specifications in terms of the numerical representation.
Like demographic parallel.
By people who, you know, meet certain diversity criteria. And I think it's significant to point out that we all supported that idea when it was offered by the KPFA Lab, Local Advisory Board, which had proposed having at least 50% of all of our boards be people of color, and at least 50% of them being women. That was in the original proposal that Pacifica was very close to consensing on. It would have, I believe, agreed to that had the bylaws process not been delayed in Los Angeles by a number of factors. And subsequent to that, we received some legal advice instructing us that to have those requirements in the bylaws will leave us vulnerable to possible lawsuits, which Pacifica is in no position to afford.
You know, I just want to ask real quick, because I was a little ambiguous on this issue myself, and I was wondering, what is at the heart of this issue of potential legal action in reference to these, the construct of these bylaws?
I just want to ask people to try to resist the urge to use provocative words such as quotas. I don't think anyone who's advocated for strong diversity requirements in our bylaws have talked about having a quota. We know that's a red flag, so perhaps we can avoid that kind of thing.
You know, can I just hold you for one second because
the brother has politely been trying to nudge his way in here for a couple of minutes.
We're not going to a commercial, I hope.
No, but you are listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Please make a note of the number where you should call tomorrow morning to pledge your support, 212-968-0500, which is different from our usual number, 212-968-0500. We may be able to take some calls later on if the usual suspects can restrain themselves, and maybe we can get some new voices in as well. Sorry, James.
Yeah. Yes, I just wanted to say a word to Evan. You've stated, this is James, by the way, James Bryan from New York. You've stated that you've stayed very much on top of the various listservs in this bylaws process. Mm-hmm. I want you to give me just a general idea of how much detailed, in-depth conversation has been put out there in the space on the actual voting process and any potential problems with it. You've noted particular legal action that diversity and affirmative action programs might engender. Have you seen any issues of any critiques or problems of the voting process that's been pretty much approved and mandated for Pacifica?
Well, first of all, again, for the listeners, there are two draft bylaws that are available to be viewed at www.wbai.net. One is called Draft A, and the other is called Draft B. And the primary difference between those two is precisely the manner of implementation for affirmative action. And it is the Draft A that many of us object to, because what it calls for as a means of implementing affirmative action is for people who were not elected in the election cycle for the local board to be added to the board after now, the election.
Now, Evan,
if the results of the election don't achieve...
I don't mean to be particularly rude, but I asked you a question and you totally sidestepped it, and now you're in fact totally subverting the spirit of my question.
I'm sorry.
And you're going into some really factual... some really
questionable
factual areas now.
I'm sorry, you asked if I had seen any dialogue about aspects of the
voting process that will be used in the election, single transferable voting. That's been used in a modified way. It's been used in two KPFA elections.
Right. I'm sorry. I guess I misunderstood your question. Have I seen any dialogue about the specifics of the single transferable voting?
Any critiques, any in-depth analysis of any potential problems? I've seen voluminous critiques of everything that the UC caucus made and we cause global warming and whatever. But I'm asking you, in a fair debate, I keep hearing of other sides that speak of bringing focus, of bringing the facts to the table. I want to hear a fair critique.
Well, I can say that I am at least somewhat familiar with the single transferable vote procedures, and I doubt that the majority of people, both within and outside of Pacifica, are that familiar with it. It's relatively new. I do consider it to be a superior form of plebiscite to
If I may, may I offer a critique that I've come by on the internet?
It sounded like you had one. I'd be glad to hear it.
Oh, okay. Now, the single transferable vote is one of many processes that presents some measure of proportional representation of the will of the electorate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just looking at a particular technical critique. They're offering some other modification of the single transferable process.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is there's a quota. Very interesting that the Q word is used to castigate on one side, and it's key in the single transferable voter process. There's a quota that is determined to a bar, if you will, above which if a candidate achieves that, they are seated. I see absolutely no problem with that in the initial stages.
Mm-hmm.
People gather votes, they meet that bar. I don't think it could be argued that they have less than broad support.
Right.
There's a problem, and what happens is there's an elimination problem. Once candidates do not clearly meet that bar, there's an elimination process.
Mm-hmm.
Very technical. I'm a degreed engineer, and it's boggled my brain at times.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an elimination process. In the process itself, there's all sorts of measures that if there are ties, that lots are drawn, or there's probabilities and so forth.
Right.
I think some of that is quite questionable in a progressive to a progressive end, if we're looking to achieve a progressive end. And even KPFA has acknowledged that and said, we will forego the strict STV process and we'll institute this 50% people of color, 50% women criteria when we're considering eliminating candidates. There is no talk of unelected candidates being seated at that time. They set a minimum level of popular support in that process, and they said to serve the mission that we will eliminate based on this criteria to serve our broader mission. I think it's totally disingenuous, totally inflammatory for you to talk about unelected people being seated.
Well,
everyone will face the electorate and will have to meet a certain minimum level of support. I think that's totally disingenuous.
Well, what I was referring to was specifically articulated in the draft A of the proposals coming out of the Diversity Language Committee. You know, I'm not inventing things here. This was, in fact, technically exactly what was proposed. Now, they, of course, you have to have certain thresholds if under any system, if there's going to be elimination, if you're going to, you know, pass a number of people because they have achieved a certain threshold of votes and are automatically seated, and there are still open seats to be filled, and the race is among the remaining people who did not reach that threshold, you still have to have a sub-threshold because you don't want to seat people who have demonstrably little support.
Let me just break in there.
Come out. Well, I wanted to respond to a couple of
things. Right. Let me just break in there to remind people that you're listening to 99.5 FM WBAI in New York. And also, two points I want to make. First of all, I unfortunately will be leaving this conversation early. But I want the listening audience to know that the Learning Tree is, in fact, creating a forum so that we can make sure we have an extensive discussion on these types of issues. Now, let me step back because I don't want to get hit with these strong assertions and opinions and ideas.
You're not taking the tree with you, Kamel, I hope.
No, I'm not.
Okay. All right, I wanted to respond to a couple of things that Evan had said. This is Fahima Sek. Evan, you had indicated that, you know, to your knowledge, that there aren't any individuals in Pacifica who are opposed to affirmative action. I have to beg to differ with that.
If you can find one, I'll be glad to argue with them.
I'm sorry?
If you can find one, I'll be glad to argue.
Well, you know, the thing is that I have seen scurrilous attacks on people and ideas and the whole concept of the desire for diversity. I have seen people slandered. I mean, I've read these things on these various lists with no constructive ideas, just personal attacks. So I would really beg to differ. You know, the thing is that I have been on this committee, and it's no picnic. It's not fun, okay? And we have, you know, we haven't all agreed, but we have made concessions, and we've come to certain agreements. We went through a democratic process. That word, we went through this process and, you know, voted on things. And I think that there have been all sorts of efforts put forth to undermine some real, sincere efforts and desires to move this thing forward. You know, and the thing is the issue of demographics, which I think was a solution that addressed the fundamental problem. Yes, you had the KPFA model that said 50% women and 50% people of color, but that is not a catch-all. There are many people that have historically been excluded from Pacifica that 50-50 proposal does not cover. And right. The idea was that each listing area is uniquely different. The demographics of those listing areas, if you use the Pacific Commission with the demographic makeup of those given listing areas, then you would easily resolve the problem. I haven't heard anyone do anything other than personally attack people who have genuine desire to make this institution diverse. You know, and there's been
you must be posting on different lists than I am because
I don't post on any of them.
Attack for that. Basic idea.
Well, Evan, if you can speak up just a bit, we're having
sure.
a little trouble here.
Just to repeat what I said, I have never seen anyone attacked because they support the idea of increasing and implementing and encouraging and fostering diversity and inclusiveness and you know, having people of color in leadership positions throughout.
There was a clear example
there?
Of that.
There was a loud hum in my
yeah, head. That was a clear yeah. example.
Okay.
If I could jump in here.
With regard to demographics, I will say this. The current draft B of the bylaws includes a system of committees called the Committees of Inclusion. This was originally proposed by Diallo Katumbo in Houston, Katumbo rather. And these committees locally are charged with researching the demographic data in each of the listening areas.
But Evan, if I can jump in.
Diversity recommendations based on that demographic.
And after Leslie jumps in, I want to address this issue with Draft B. Go ahead, Leslie.
Yeah. You know, first of all, I want to say that both of the plans call for ascertaining what the demographics are locally.
Right.
Only Plan A calls for any implementation. And you've said, Evan, and it's been said here, that, yeah, Pacifica has been historically white, but it hasn't been historically democratic.
Right.
And that's happening now. And in order, I think, to fulfill our mission, which clearly speaks to dialogue across racism and not so clearly about dialogue against across sexism.
And let's not forget class.
And class, which also belongs in the mix. That if we're going to be democratic and we're going to dialogue, that we have to have some way of making sure that all the people that are part of that dialogue are present in Pacifica and have a strong voice in the governance.
Right.
And I don't think we can do that with anything less than reserving some place for them at the table.
I guess that's where we fundamentally disagree, although... I do want to reiterate that I was perfectly prepared to support requirements as the KPFA model had suggested. You know, I supported those requirements because I essentially agreed that it would be at least a very meaningful gesture to have those guarantees in place.
I think it would be a lot more than a meaningful gesture.
To be higher. They had wanted the diversity quotas to be 60% in both categories.
Who is they, Evan?
And I would have supported that, too.
Who is they that you're referring to, Evan?
Who are the they who wanted the 60%?
Yes. You're trying to be precise.
Sorry?
No, you've been claiming to be precise and hawking over the listservs and so forth.
A higher diversity quotient, let's say, of 60% people of color and 60% women was actually Dave Fertig, a lab member from Los Angeles and the KPFK representative.
Actually, that was proposed here back in December. If you'd followed the listservs, I had that idea out back then. WBAI passed it before KPFK did.
May I?
Okay, but I'm saying the first time that I heard it discussed on the listservs was when Dave Fertig mentioned it.
Okay. David,
it may have been proposed at WBAI prior to that. I'm not on all of the WBAI lists.
I'm sorry. This is Serene. Let me just pause for a minute, and I'd like us to sort of not have such an insider conversation, so that someone who is stripping across the conversation for the first time
Good
tonight
idea.
Is totally clueless about what we're talking about. So just before I do a quick review, let's David, you were trying to say something.
Perhaps it'll wait till after your review. I was going to suggest an underlying question in these details.
Okay. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. You're listening to the program Under the Learning Tree without its host, who has deserted us. Something about needing to be at work at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Imagine that.
Well.
Selfish guy.
He is indeed. But you're joined on the line with David Moore from Montana, Evan Davis from Ohio, Fahima Sek from who resides in Washington, D.C., claims to be a New Yorker, Leslie Radford of Los Angeles. James Bryan joins me here in studio. I am Serene Roberts. We're having a discussion on race, diversity, and the Pacifica bylaws. For those of you who are just coming across the station, WBAI is one of five sister stations in the Pacifica Foundation. We are non-commercial, listener-supported. In New York, we call ourselves Peace and Justice Radio, a brand name that I think we can use throughout the world, actually, because there don't seem to be many broadcast medium involved in that or interested in that. We have other stations in Los Angeles, KPFK, Washington, D.C., WPFW, Houston, KPFT, and Berkeley, KPFA. We are in the process of rewriting the bylaws of the Pacifica Foundation. There were four lawsuits brought against the foundation, in some cases by listeners of the foundation, members of the local advisory boards of the foundation, and members of the Pacifica National Board itself. The lawsuits were settled in December 2001. You can get more information about that by visiting WBAI.org, which is the site of the, which is our local station site, and it's actually quite dynamic at this point. It's been revamped. In the governance area, in the left-hand bar about...
WBAI.net.
Okay, thank you, Evan. I'm speaking about WBAI.org. I'm aware of the existence of WBAI.net. WBAI.net is a website that actually was very useful, particularly during the year that we were locked out.
Don't forget
Pacifica. And it is, in fact, a website that is owned and operated by one of the, dare I use the term, factions, currently at work on elections and other issues, so that it is hardly an impartial source, although it is a very useful source.
Oh,
the,
I disagree.
I'm sorry?
I disagree. I think
that is Evan. Okay, we're not doing that kind of conversation here. WBAI.net, as I said, has been a particularly useful site, but it is hardly impartial. The website... manager for the site, in fact, responded to a question that was put to him about something that was included and something else that was excluded by saying, "What's it to you? What's on WBAI.net?" So I would think those are grounds for questioning how impartial they are. But at any rate, WBAI.org is the site of the Pacifica station WBAI. And there is governance information available, as I said, in the left-hand bar about 2 inches of the way down. In some cases, it does link to WBAI.net, as the person who does WBAI.net also does some work for WBAI.org, and I guess self-promotion is not a crime. Yes.
There's also SavePacifica.net, which is a very useful site as well.
There are actually a number of sites where one can get documentation that are a bit more uniform in their practices. But if you want to have a look at drafts A and B, as well as other documents, if you visit the governance section of WBAI.org, you'll see links to all of that. There are also lots of information available, not as much as I'd like, but on www.pacifica.org. So, back to where we were. We are in the process of rewriting the bylaws pursuant to the settlement agreement of December 2001. We are at this point focused on the diversity language criteria, if you will, in the bylaws, and specifically concerned about the incorporation at the seat of power, at the table where decisions are made, and not simply as increased listener base. We're talking about the involvement of primarily of people of color and women and LGBT and youth and all those groups that have traditionally been absent from the ruling boards of Pacifica. So that's where we are. And if someone can actually just, and Fahim, I know you're on that committee, so if you can maybe explain how we ended up with drafts A and B as they're currently available on WBAI.org, I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, that's something, you know, that I wanted to address. You know, Evan alluded to the puritanical content in... Well, I'm sorry, let me take that back. That wasn't very nice. He just alluded to how superior Draft B was. And how Draft B came to be was that this ad hoc subcommittee came up with language. We submitted it. There was some disagreements on certain issues. There was a majority report and a minority report. What Carol Spooner, who is a member of the National Board Secretary, actually, she, in effect, got together with certain people that were on the subcommittee, certain people that had certain perspectives, those, in my view, that... members of this subcommittee who didn't agree with many of the issues that others on the diversity committee had agreed with respect to diversity. I don't want to characterize anyone, but nonetheless, what Carol Spooner did with a select member, a subgroup of this subcommittee, was develop bylaw language
for diversity that was very, very different from what this committee had come up with under the pretext that they were putting it in legalese. By the time they were done with this document, it was completely different from what we had put forth and what had came out of this committee. The other issue that I have is that this continued hysteria, this continued red herring that we're going to end up in court. There have been attorneys that have said that clearly that is not the fact, and the initial attorney who had put forth this notion that, you know, if we use any strong bylaw language, any strong directives, that we would end up in court. From what I understand, that particular attorney, this was not his area of expertise. And we've had people who are experts in this area, like the latest controversy with Mr. LaBelle. I mean, every strategy that could be imagined under the sun has been employed here, and it's outrageous.
You know, may I suggest an interesting point in this conversation? I think what Fahima is relating is the pain of these issues of diversity and white liberalism and all of these accusations that go back and forth, which take their own forum for addressing. And I think Kamau suggested that we really need to keep some of the basic issues in the forefront, and I think we need to move back and forth between the larger and basic issues and these details as we work through this. And I'd like to suggest another layer of the larger issues that may be useful to address. In the conversation between Leslie and Evan a few moments ago, Evan begged to differ on reserving some place at the table, in Leslie's term, for people of color and women and other unrepresented groups in Pacifica, if I heard that conversation properly. And I think that basic disagreement is at close to the heart of these different factions of the A and B group that Fahima is mapping out the history of. And what that suggests to me, it's the discomfort that everyone seems to feel in this phrase, unelected members. You know, reserving some place at the table for unelected members from these groups. And underneath that discomfort is the question of democracy as the somehow ultimate principle here. We all invoke democratic processes as the virtue that is somehow the measure of our action. And I'd like to suggest that even democracy is not a holy word. That in looking at the larger and questions and coming at the basic problems here, there are different forms of democracy in the world. Some have referred to Indonesia as an authoritarian democracy, you know, and it's possible to use democratic structures and governance to oppress people.
Right.
And that word, democracy, has holy resonance in America. We pride ourselves on being the, you know, making the world safe for what? Democracy. But we also corrupt democracy through what we all know as corporate globalization, and use democracy as a veil for really remarkable repressive policies. I'm not saying that democracy isn't the goal, and I think but the point is that there are levels of democracy, and precisely are the details of our selecting voting procedures, single transferable voting and other proportional representations, are trying to get at layers and improvements on democracy as a malleable and changeable principle. But if we can bring that question to the fore, where we even critique democracy itself as a principle, as well as in detail from our through our voting procedures, I'm suggesting that we would get to demography as actually an equal goal in terms of simple representation. And what I'm hearing in this conversation is some people actually validating demography as Pacifica's goal. Or one could say that demography is the goal of democracy. And we know that by majority rule voting, we don't get demographic representation.
Right.
And it's in the processes of trying to refine democracy that we come up with committees of inclusion to adjust the limitations of any system to match our listenership, which is a demographic match. Whether or not it's democratic in this kind of conversation and questioning is not an issue. The question is whether it's demographic. And that takes away the emotional hot button feeling around unelected members. There's a whole other history of the stigma of affirmative action that has yet another conversation. But so that those so-called unelected members need to be, in my opinion, equally ensconced in their authority on the labs with the so-called elected members. But that is another conversation. But
David, I think you're making an important distinction there. And
okay.
I would simply hope to add a little clarification that when Leslie, in reference to the so-called draft A model, speaks of reserving a place at the table, she is talking about bylaws mandated legal guarantees that break down along demographic lines as determined by the local committees of inclusion, by which people would be added to the board after the election as a remedy for any shortcomings in the target diversity makeup. I have no problems with the targeted diversity makeup, and I think the inclusion of demographic information is necessary, no matter what the system is. The problem that we're having is with requirements about which there is a lot of legal speculation and some misgivings. I mean, they have essentially been determined in many precedents.
Can you keep it louder, please?
To be illegal. And outreach as... The concept of affirmative action is initially intended to suggest, you know, aggressive outreach so that you have a diverse pool of candidates for the board so that the people who get elected from that pool of candidates may come to represent the demographic diversity in the listening area. And what I would love to do, what I would really, really like to do, not just here in the course of this conversation, but throughout Pacifica as a whole, is for us to be able to move beyond this discussion of bylaws and legalities and start doing the real brass tacks work of getting that outreach done. You know,
but
going into
not,
the community
not a,
and being, you know.
Right, the point, and the conversations in Pacifica have often moved from governance procedures to outreach, as though those were alternatives rather than complementary steps towards the same goal of demography.
Oh, of course they're complementary. Yeah.
And the fact that we have the opportunity to build bylaws that can require demographic representation in Pacifica is an historic moment that if we fail to seize will bring us who knows how many more generations, and I can vouch for generations, of incomplete Pacifica ideals. And if we can fasten these bylaws to that ideal now, we can also do the outreach. But outreach is not a substitute for bylaws that guarantee, I'll use that term because I'm not being legal here, diversity. And there is no reason other than, as I understand it, other than a kind of diversion to outreach, there's no reason to not establish affirmative action and diversity bylaws as strongly as humanly possible. And I think humanly is perhaps a better word than legally, but they certainly go together.
Can I just add this statement that I feel like a voice crying in the wilderness often. I think that Pacifica has to be the standard bearer, mm-hmm. particularly in light of the climate that we're currently in, and particularly in light of the administration and where they're trying to take us. We have to set a precedent. You know, we have to set the precedent. I mean, it is up to us. Pacifica has to take the lead on this. And it just boggles my mind how we can't see this. And, you know, when Serene had made mention of the fact that, you know, we have these sister stations, and each time I hear that, it seems like, you know, this is Family Feud going on here. You know? I mean, we've got to move beyond this.
I think standard bearer is the word, and we all know in the current climate that Pacifica is a voice in the wilderness, and that this flag is deeply, the standard that's being carried is deeply riddled with attacks. And at the same time, while we do that affirmation of what we can carry into the world, I think Family Feud is also useful to think of how we talk to each other. And those who, on all sides, it's been stunning to me how, as Evan is saying, but everyone feels that affirmative action is right, you know, and diversity is what Pacifica is for. It's amazing to me how everyone on all sides is able to demonize the other side. And that's holding us back, frankly. We need, as a family, to get past the feuding mode, which doesn't mean naively being nice to each other. It means fighting through what we believe to the truth of what we share, basically.
Okay, I want to just jump in for a second and point out that while we hear, you know, this is happening on the list and that is happening on the list, that the majority of Pacifica listeners, I do not believe, are on the list, and that among the list, there are the lists that are open to people, and there are the lists that are slightly less open, and there are the lists that are by recommendation only. There's the insider's list, and, you know, so but let's not pretend that because there's some discussion or dialogue on any of the five popular list, whatever that means, that we by any measure know what people, what the people, the listeners, the membership wants, so that whatever we offer is in fact our interpretation, and I'm not saying that's invalid, but let's put it in its proper context. This isn't the gospel, this isn't the listenership, this isn't even the I mean, this is the minority of the minority.
You're simply saying that we don't represent any kind of majority.
I'm saying
the community, and that in fact we have no way to determine what a majority view might be. And I would definitely agree with that.
Well, I don't know to hear you speak a little earlier. You were talking about what people in Pacifica, and you knew that no one in Pacifica felt such and such a way.
Well, I
which
said
is
no one I knew.
Right, Evan, but with all due respect, even if you've attended every board meeting, I think we're talking maybe you've met, what? Let's be generous and say you've met 1,000 different people within Pacifica?
Well, what is your point? Are you trying to say that there are people who disagree with the view that I've offered, that there are people within Pacifica who
I'm saying you offered
the need for affirmative action.
You offered. What was the last thing you said? Your voice was a little low, actually.
That point arose because.
Okay, I don't need you to explain your point. I just need you to repeat your statement.
Affirmative action.
I can't hear you, Edwin. Could you repeat your statement and speak up?
If you could not revise your statement every time, but simply repeat the same words but more loudly, we're having a little difficulty hearing you. Is what I was saying.
Okay. That whole discussion arose because I made the statement that I did not know of anyone in Pacifica who does not feel that affirmative action is appropriate, necessary, and desirable. I hope that doesn't constitute a revision of my statement. That is at least what I meant, and I think I made that clear. I did not mean to say that I think everyone in Pacifica supports affirmative action, just that I have not encountered anyone who doesn't. And if you're raising this point now, it must be for a purpose, and I would have to ask if you're trying to make the point that you think there are people who don't.
I've
met people who don't believe in affirmative action in Pacifica.
Okay.
In fact, speak of taking legal action against anything that would do such a thing.
I've seen it articulated on many of the lists.
Yeah, and that what we've heard isn't the issue. I think we have really valid questions in front of us that are larger than even our opinions.
And, I think the family issue is the family
how
analogy.
To deal with race issues in Pacifica. I don't want to sound like an animal chorus, but I really believe that in this process we're clarifying that we need racism training, as it's called, or
anti-racism training.
Yeah, let's all get trained in racism.
Well, certainly all of us
have been.
Point, don't you think?
Yeah. And I think, coming to the table with that kind of training would have an influence on the outcome and on the process, obviously. And we don't have time or resources to do that in the settlement schedule that the courts have given us, but I think we can make efforts in those directions, very tangible in each community.
Yeah, if I may, just to that point, this is James again. I see that we operate in a dominant political culture here, where we're trying to bring in these ideas of proportional representation of we've had other people that have spoken more strongly and said that individual groups need to self appoint their representatives, and so but to the broad idea is to have broad representation of the masses. The popular political culture makes it a contest and says that somebody's going to win. So Evan, I mean, if everything has to be combative here and we can't have fair critique, then nothing can be advanced. You've advanced the point that there'll be unelected people seated in this process, according to Draft 8.
Yeah.
Now,
Draft 8 provides for that.
Well, I was just basically ceding to your characterization. I don't in any way agree with it or believe it has any merit.
Okay.
But,
well, I would simply recommend it to listeners
read it
and determine for themselves.
If I may, I mean, I've asked for you to give me some, to come with me intellectually in this process to examine this electoral model, to examine the ideas, the principles here. In PR itself, the idea of winner-take-all is the whole idea of PR is to try to avoid the idea of winner-take-all, to have broad representation.
Right.
We're talking about seating a board. At this occasion, we're talking about 18 listener seats and, at minimum, 18 listener seats and 6 staff seats.
Mm-hmm.
So It's relatively broad, a broad selection of people. And we're saying that the listeners' will should be as broadly and as accurately followed as possible. And we're saying within the mission. We feel that if there's a political culture there that says, that still says, winner take all, that certain people have more merit than others intrinsically, these are facts in the dominant political culture. Of course they leak through into our process. That Pacifica must have a progressive answer to some of those particular problems and those trends. And, you know, if we could have some discussion in that parameter, I mean, who brought up the idea of PR? I mean, I just want, because the way you speak on this matter of unelected people, it's absolutely in line with the dominant culture. You're taking a winner-take-all approach to a process that says that we need broad representation and we need to eliminate the idea of winner-take-all.
Not at all. And in fact, that's one of the reasons I favor proportional representation is precisely because it does get away from that. And as, civil rights activists, if asked to offer an opinion on this, generally those that I have spoken with, outside of the context of Pacifica and other matters, but as well as within Pacifica, will tell you that proportional voting is one of the best mechanisms we have.
Oh, okay.
For
I've heard extensive little vague theory on this through an exhaustive bylaws process. My simple point is that it's basically a semantic argument to say that, okay, well, we don't believe in winner take all, but if you speak of a loser and losers being seated on the board, it's the same thing. So, let's be frank here.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's do this. Why don't you describe that portion of draft A so that I will not be vulnerable to your charges that I've misrepresented it. And perhaps if you describe it quickly, it'll move us all ahead where we can start with a common understanding.
Okay. I can't hear.
And that's not an attack at all. I'm simply proposing a way to move forward.
Okay, if you're at, listen, I have, I'm not going to even attempt to succinctly put a synopsis of that draft language in place.
Well, is anyone else here who's in this conversation?
If somebody wishes
to
do that, that's fine. But I just want to know the point of this, because what has been, the points of contention have been, I mean, you stated that you just mentioned that you've never heard or known of anybody who opposed affirmative action language or policy.
Right, and David said that he has encountered it.
But the point that you mentioned it was when, in fact, I believe Fahima was making this a strong case, was attempting to make a strong case for it. And so when you later said that it was just an innocent addition to the conversation, I mean, anybody can say that their experience takes on a particular tone that might be contrary or might be very much in line.
I'm not following you. Can you please clarify? I do want to understand you, but I'm just not sure.
Right. Well, at the point that you mentioned what you personally experienced in this process as far as people's attitudes on affirmative action,
right,
was not in the realm of a conversation of people's personal personal experiences. So you mentioned that your personal experience for a particular reason. I'll leave it to the listeners. I'm not going to ascribe motive. I'll leave it to the listeners. It was just interesting that you later on said that it was just, you just happened to mention it.
No, I was never allowed to finish that point, but that's all right.
I'm just saying, you brought it up for your purposes. I mean, it wasn't a part of the general conversation what our personal experiences are. I mean, I had an elaborate speech that I wanted to make on my personal experience with politics and Pacifica and progressive action at my progressive life. So I just left that aside just for time purposes.
Okay, let me just say, since we have about 15 minutes left for this discussion, I'd like us to talk about where we go from here in terms of the work that's left to be done, what the next steps are in terms of the work of the Diversity Language Committee. And also, I know that in spite of the fact that the IPNB has, in fact, created a committee, and, of course, there was some discussion about the composition of that committee and apparently some broad misunderstanding by some parties, that in spite of the fact that there is this committee in existence and it is a working committee, and by the way, if you're interested in seeing some of the work of that committee, you can do so by going to the Yahoo Groups site, Pacifica_diversity. It's actually groups.yahoo.com/group. Fine. Just go to www.yahoo.com, go to groups, and do a search for Pacifica, PACIFICA, _diversity. And it'll bring you to the website where the diversity group has been communicating. You're not free to post as a non-member, but you are free to read. And there's some interesting discussion there. So if we can talk about where the Diversity Language Committee is now, what the next steps are in terms of their specific task, and also about, I think I've heard that in spite of the fact that there is such a committee, that the chair of the Bylaws Committee has asked the labs to go ahead and vote. And also, of course, we'd like to talk about that and talk about the upcoming IPNB meeting, the date for which may or may not have been changed. I've been unable to get a response from the chair of the IPNB. So, Fahima, as a member of that committee, if you could just sort of tell us where you last heard we are.
Well, where we last were, I believe we had a meeting on the 10th. No, actually, not the 10th. About a week and a half ago. And where we were was many of the things we had voted on were to be sent to Jonathan Lubell, who would, in effect, present those things, the document to Ted Shaw and Lonnie Guineer, who would, in effect, give us some comments back and essentially place what we had came up with into bylaws language, and it would then, in effect, go to the INPB to vote on and then subsequently go to the labs. However, there have been a series of events that have transpired since then that, in my view, is just an attempt to further undermine our efforts. And, you know, it would take a whole other show to go into those particulars of some of the things that have transpired, which have completely flawed me. But that's where we are at this process. Efforts by those in the network to undermine what we've been attempting to do by any means necessary.
And let me add to that. This is Leslie again from KPFK, where, by the way, we are also having a fundraiser, for those of you who might be streaming. That what the Diversity Language Committee has come up with is absolutely unique and in this added seats model, because in fact it does no harm. Nobody's deprived of a seat, and it is untested legally as far as I've been able to find out. And I think we're looking forward to something here that might actually change the face of affirmative action in this country if we can accomplish it. I think it's flaw at this point, and please excuse me, Fahima, because I really admire the work the committee's been doing, is that it doesn't go far enough. It only adds 5 seats to accomplish diversity on a board of 29, or 1/6. And I think if we have a failure in diversity, frankly, we're going to need more than that to remedy it. But again, you know, I absolutely applaud the work the committee's done. They have spent hours and hours and hours and come up with something that is creative and unique and frankly may rock the world.
Okay, and let me say, for those of you who want to hear the meetings of the Diversity Language Committee, and I really have to commend the people who participated. I know I certainly think commendations are due the listeners, because you had some marathon sessions. I think I remember there was a Saturday, I think, when you went from 9 a.m. to maybe about 6 p.m. with maybe a 10-minute break.
Actually, I went to work and came back, and we were
and they were still at it.
I couldn't believe it.
Okay, and by the way, you are listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Peace and justice and independence and free thought, free speech radio. For those of you who want to hear the archives of the meetings, you can do so at kpftx.org. There have been several meetings, and you can spend the next 3 weeks or so catching up on what you've missed. I believe there's another meeting scheduled for next week, or tentatively scheduled for next week. If you go to the Yahoo site I mentioned, Pacifica_diversity, you will be able to follow the announcement of the meeting. There may have been a meeting a couple of nights ago that was sort of an informal meeting of some members of the committee. I'm not quite sure how that went.
Nor am I.
There was some discussion on that list about whether or not there was to have been a meeting on Tuesday. There does not seem to have been consensus or anything resembling consensus on it, but I understand that there may have been a meeting of some parties of that committee and some possibly new language coming out as a result or in wake of that informal committee meeting. Okay, so that's where we are in terms of the Diversity Language Committee. Generally, in terms of the bylaws, and we're going to have to wrap up soon, so I'm going to ask you guys to restrict yourselves to, you persons, to restrict yourself to 1 minute, knowing that you will take a minute and a half. But the IPNB is... I'm sorry?
You're so generous.
Thanks. The IPNB is scheduled to meet in New York, originally scheduled to meet in New York on Juneteenth weekend, really, beginning Friday the 20th. We don't have an agenda. We don't have confirmation that the meeting will be on. If, in fact, someone knows, and if, in fact, there's a member of the national board listening, the IPNB listening, if you could email me that information, would be a wonderful thing. croberts@wbai.org would be pleased to announce either the confirmation of the dates or a change of dates, because, as you know, for people who are planning to travel into the meeting, the sooner they can make those arrangements, the better. So, beginning virtually anywhere without interrupting each other, please, your parting words.
I guess I have a question I'd like to ask everybody, so I'll not get the last word in. It's a hot one. And you're all more intricately engaged than I can be from Montana in these processes. And I regret that, and I admire Evan's work from Ohio at staying closely in touch.
David, I can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better?
A little, yes.
Yeah, I'm wondering, is there a racial divide along these issues? Very simple question. Are people of color more in Pacifica, more in line with draft A than draft B? And are people of pallor more in line with draft B? That's a question, and it may be unanswerable, but if you want to include addressing that in your closing remarks, I'd appreciate it.
Don't I'll answer it once, but
you faded out again.
Say again?
You faded out.
Essentially, he's asking whether in your closing remarks, and you really are each down to 1 minute hard at this point, whether you wish to address the question of whether there is a racial divide in Pacifica on the issue of how we guarantee, or do we guarantee, or how we provide for inclusion. Did I get you, David?
Yeah, that's a good summary.
Well, as the clock ticks away, let me just say that I want to go on record as saying that draft B is illegitimate. It was not a document that came out of this committee. It was a reinterpretation of what this committee had came up with, and I think that the recent effort to get many of the labs to vote on a document that has not gone to the board, you know, it's quite telling that, you know, every means possible
is going to be used to undermine what we have been trying to do. And finally, I think, you know, when we were in the crisis, you know, even though we weren't all in agreement on everything, we came together to, you know, gain back the network in an effort to essentially, you know, have access and get information out that was counter to what the Maine was putting out. And I think we need to come together again around this issue. We need to move forward. We need to be the standard bearer. We need to set a precedent.
This is Evan, if I can just answer really quickly. First of all, I want to say that I have been deeply, deeply troubled and saddened over the divisions that have arisen between us. People that I have considered to be friends and allies have been on the opposite side of a fence, and I believe that the notion of a racial division has been an additional complication which hasn't spoken to any reality that I've experienced, and it's painful for me to witness that. It's exactly the opposite of what I want to see at Pacifica. However, within the context of this program, let me state emphatically that I do not feel that I have been given the opportunity to complete an idea or make a point coherently. I've essentially been ganged up on here, which I expected, and so I have created an email account, which is bylawsdebate@hotmail.com. That account is for anyone here on this program, as well as anyone who might be listening, who wishes to have a more thorough and complete conversation in which both people posting to that email account and myself can be
Evan?
Afforded an opportunity
Hi.
To speak and complete the
Okay, Evan, you know, I'm sorry that you feel that you were ganged up on or that you feel it was expected, because that's certainly not the exchange that we had prior to the call. You didn't indicate that you felt that's what this was going to be.
Serena,
you actually, I'm sorry, Fahima, let me finish. You actually thanked me for thinking of including you, and I didn't include you because I thought we agreed on anything. I included you because I thought you might have something to say and might be interested in doing so in a way that didn't include cutting other people off, but meant a real dialogue as opposed to some of the things that some programs tend to degenerate into. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry?
And I'm sorry that this one did.
Well, you know, that is your estimation. Just 1 minute, please. I know that you did a piece on FSRN about the bylaws process. Do you remember the date? I know it was a couple of weeks ago. I didn't hear it, but...
I don't, but is the FSRN archives are easy enough to scroll through.
Well.
And it was, I would say, no more than 2 weeks.
Okay, the website for Free Speech Radio News, by the way. I'm sorry, we're sort of out of time. The other producers here, and I do want to give other people closing time as well. The address is www.fsrn.org, and, maybe it was 3 weeks ago. I thought it was about 2 weeks ago. But at any rate, you guys can look for it and get some more information there. And do support Free Speech Radio News, which I think is an important voice. Fahima,
just very quickly, I want to extend the invitation to Evan to join us on our lab show tomorrow at WPFW, and I'll get the if I email you that bylaws debate with the particulars, or I can get the number to contact you with Serena. Are you available to do a show this morning?
What time?
11:30 a.m.
Eastern
to 12:30 p.m. Eastern.
I can make myself available. Sure.
Okay, so you guys will do the trading of numbers later.
Okay.
Let me just say...
And I will look forward to that. I mean, I hope that...
Okay, Evan, I'm sorry. It's 3:58. I think Leslie Radford, did you want to make a closing comment?
Yeah, if I could. Thanks a lot. First of all, I want to announce that the KPFK lab tonight refused to be strong-armed into a vote on Plan A or Plan B and voted to table the measure altogether. And I also want to say that although, yes, this has been a divisive debate, and yes, it has largely broken down along racial and ethnic lines, I nonetheless think it's been critical, crucial to the future of Pacifica that we have this debate, no matter how painful it's been. And I think Pacifica will only be better for it, and I certainly look forward to a day when as I said before, I can look around the table and know that all of Pacifica is represented there.
Okay, the other thing I just wanted to mention, and James is, I'll give you your word, listeners here, and he's ready to go. The website for, there is a discussion group that is wide open. So it's not a private email, but it is a discussion group that's wide open for anyone who wants to discuss diversity at Pacifica and within Pacifica. And again, you do the same thing. You go to Yahoo, click on groups, and that's diversity for the digit, the actual number for Pacifica. And that's open, and we'd be interested in seeing. I certainly visit it. I don't post nearly as often as I should, although I did a little this week. And that's another place where we can have this kind of continued exchange. Okay, James Bryan.
If I may just say quickly, I do believe there's a racial divide in perception and in experience, definitely. And what happens is that, unfortunately, from the major culture, whites often, as in comes in the debate, when the quota word is dropped, that when whites are uncomfortable in this society, they have the option to strong arm and shut a process down. Okay, I'll leave it at that.
Okay, David, since you actually threw out a question instead of a comment, we'll give you a second.
Okay. Well, I feel as though we all need to address that question in its own forum and come at what is a perceived or real or unreal racial divide in Pacifica as a topic of conversation, and just be honest and forthright, and as Leslie said so beautifully, go through that pain in order to prove the process of what Pacifica can really become.
Okay, well, you know, stay tuned. Thank you all for joining us. We've been joined by Leslie Radford of the KPFK lab in Los Angeles, Fahima Sek of the WPFW lab in Washington, D.C., Evan Davis, who reports for Free Speech Radio News, among other things, out of Ohio, David Moore, who is the son of Eleanor McKinney and Lou Hill, the founders of Pacifica, and who streams us as much as he can on the internet from Montana, James Bryan of Brooklyn, New York. Thank you to Kamau Kalfani, who we hope is asleep for 30 minutes or something, for the time to discuss this issue. We hope to discuss it with you again soon. I intend to strong arm other producers, frankly, to get some airtime for it. And thank you for listening. This is WBAI 99.5 FM, New York.
Hi, this is WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM. We will immediately bring you Burn, Baby, Burn from 4 to 6 a.m. with Lista. Please stay tuned.